This meeting of House Health and Social Services Committee will now come to order. It is 3:24 p.m. Sorry, my eyes are a little tired. 4:24 p.m., thank you, Mr. Speaker. On Thursday, March 16th in Capitol Room 106, members, present and our representative, Johnston, Tarr, Edgman, and myself, Sponholes. Let the record reflect that we have a quorum to conduct business. Please take a moment to silence all your cell phones. Take them off vibrate if you can for the duration of the meeting. Before we begin, I'd like to thank Butch Carver, the House Hess Secretary, and Alex Beebe Goudache from Juneau LIO for staffing the committee today, as well as Ted Madsen, who is our committee aide. Today we're going to be hearing two bills and a presentation. The first up is a presentation from Facing Foster Care in Alaska. Second, we'll hear House Bill 151 by Representative Les Guerra relating to the foster care system. The committee will take invited testimony on that legislation. Finally, we'll hear HB 103 for a second time, take public testimony, leave public testimony open, and then set the bill aside due to time constraints. Amanda Metivier, would you please come forward, put yourself on the record, and begin your presentation? Thank you. I'd also like to acknowledge Aubrey has joined us in the room. She's going to make vocal contributions periodically. Thank you.
For the record, my name's Amanda Metivier, and I'm with Facing Foster Care in Alaska. And I first just wanted to start out by saying thank you for... I know you've all been very busy all day, so thanks for making time for us to be able to come in and present. I know it's been a long day and probably night, so we really appreciate that. I was going to talk briefly about Facing Foster Care in Alaska and who we are and what we do, and we have a number of current and former foster youth here with us in Juneau. We've been here since Wednesday. And we'll be here through tomorrow. So we bring in young people from all over the state each year to come and learn about government and how the legislature works and get to be advocates and have a say in what happens to them, because for young people in foster care, the state's their legal guardian, and you all represent the state. So first, I just wanted to show who we had in the room for our young people. So if our members of Facing Foster Care in Alaska who are here could stand up. There's quite a few of us. So we have young people here who represent each of the five OCS regions of the state. So if you could remain standing, if you spent more than a year in foster care. Remain standing if you spent more than 2 years in foster care. 4 years? 6 years? 8 years? 10 years? 12 years? 15 years? 18 years? Could you stand up if you had more than one foster care placement? That could be a foster home, residential facility, group home. Unlicensed relative caregiver. Remain standing if you had more than 2 foster care placements. More than 5? More than 10? More than 15? More than 20? More than 30? Have a seat. Stand up if you had more than one caseworker during your time in foster care with the Office of Children's Services. Stay standing if you had more than 2 caseworkers, 4 caseworkers, 6 caseworkers, 8 caseworkers. Stand up if you have siblings, brothers and sisters. Remain standing if you were separated in different foster care placements from your siblings. Have a seat. And finally, stand up if you feel you achieved permanency during your time in foster care. Through adoption, guardianship, reunification, or just your own emotional connection to a long-term caring adult. We are facing Foster Care in Alaska. We're a nonprofit organization of young people in and from the foster care system.
I'm going to give you a moment to collect yourself and recognize that Representative Keto has joined us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We're a nonprofit organization of young people in and from the foster care system, and we work to promote changes, positive changes to child welfare in Alaska. And so we feel sort of the best way to do that is by asking the experts. So young people who have experience in our system are really the experts. We're the ones who live and breathe the system each and every day. And so in Alaska, our numbers of children coming into the system has been on the rise. We're at a record high. More than 1% of our overall child population lives in foster care in our state. It's pretty dismal. There's lots of things that contribute to that. It's not really clear as to whether or not that's the opioid epidemic or turnover in caseworker staff and lots of things that factor into that. But what we do is we bring on board young people. We teach them about their rights, how to be advocates for themselves, whether that be in their individual cases while they're in the system or for everyone else coming into the system behind them. Our young people go out and train child welfare staff and caregivers. So we go out and talk about our experiences in the system to incoming social workers, to foster parents, to judges, to lawmakers, to give you a perspective and an idea of what it's really like to be in the system, but also to give you an idea of what would help. We're also sort of by default a peer support organization, and so our young people tend to lean on each other in a big way. When you're in foster care, it can be a really lonely place. I know in my own experience, I spent 3 years in the foster care system in Anchorage, and for a long time it just felt like it was me and my sister living in this foster home. And the first time I was invited to an event to meet other young people who were in a similar experience, had a similar situation, I really felt for the first time I was no longer like ashamed of my experience. I really felt like I belonged. Like I, you know, could talk about things happening in my home. I could talk about things happening with my parents. I could talk about my fear of aging out and what was going to happen on the other side of state custody. And so our young people often help each other, whether that's supporting them and a lot of our youth house each other as they're leaving the system and they need roommates or a place to live. They help them find resources. They pick each other up to take each other grocery shopping and help with like a lot of basic life skill stuff. And then finally we do, you know, sort of larger scale advocacy, whether that's proposing specific legislative items that youth come up with directly from all over the state. Talking to judges, we meet quarterly with the Office of Children's Services Director, and so youth have a direct line to Christy and her team to be able to make recommendations and work through things that maybe she could do to implement changes in practice. I wanted to go over two things. First is, I don't know if you got this, it would have been in your packet, but this is a Foster Youth Bill of Rights. So the federal government passed a law 2 years ago, H.R. 4980. It's the Preventing Sex Trafficking and Strengthening Families Act. And there were a lot of things in that, but probably one of the most important was really making sure that young people ages 14 and older were notified of their rights while they were in the system and, you know, had information on that and were able to sign off on it. So we actually worked with youth throughout the state and with the department to put this together. And it might seem like really basic stuff, letting youth know that they had a right to attend their court hearings. A lot of our young people don't do that or don't know. A right to be a part of the process in planning for their own permanency, how they're going to leave foster care, whether that's through adoption or guardianship, reunification, or aging out of the system. And sometimes our youth don't know the plan for them. Things like knowing why they were in foster care. We have some young people that come into the system that don't know why they were in care. Leaving the system with, you know, things like their documents, Social Security card, birth certificate, medical records, you know, having a history, something that's going to follow them when they're out on their own. So a lot of those things are outlined in this Bill of Rights, and OCS has really been working diligently through their independent living program to make sure that youth get a copy of this. They know that if they disagree with someone on their team or if they're struggling, they have the right to request an attorney. And they also ask that youth sign off on this so that they know they got a copy. There's a certification piece there. And then I just wanted to share sort of the biggest piece of work we've been doing for a long time, and some of you have maybe heard from our youth or seen our youth around the Capitol over the last few years. We try to come every year and meet with you all in your offices or give testimony in committee or make sure that we get introduced. But for a long time, we really pushed for resources for young people who are transitioning out of the system and into adulthood, because so many of us leave and end up homeless, incarcerated, have children very early, and don't have a lot of supports in place to be able to, you know, take care of our own families or even the skills. And so for a long time, we were pushing for a lot of things related to youth who are transitioning out and the skills that they needed. And one thing became really clear over and over and over again, and that was youth don't need as many social services and resources when they have a family or a connection to an adult, somebody in the community. When they leave our system with a community of support, whether that's an adoptive parent or a mentor, an adult in their life, then they're not going to need resources to go to driver's education, for example, to learn how to drive. Somebody's going to teach them how to drive. They're not going to need to access social services, you know, to go to learn how to drive or to learn how to write a resume or find jobs. They're going to have somebody that can help them do those things, navigate those things. And I read an article recently. It says one of the people who are most successful often had a nagging mother. But really, when you have somebody in your life that's pushing you to do things, you're going to do better. But when you leave the system and all your resources and supports sort of expire, then our youth do worse. And so we really pushed for permanency, and we really want to see that youth are no longer aging out of foster care. Our hope and goal and dream is that every young person who leaves foster care leaves to a permanent family. We, on Tuesday, had an opportunity to meet with the OCS director and had a conversation about that in the department. I'm really excited. It's going to put some things in place so that if a youth is going to get the goal to age out of the system, it's going to go right to the director, and so she'll have to make that final decision to see if it is absolutely necessary to even further restrict that. Sort of in a nutshell, that's who we are and what we do. So I don't know if there are questions, but again, we really appreciate your time and allowing us to come and present before your committee.
Thank you, Ms. Metivier, and I want to I want to thank you and recognize you and the rest of the Facing Foster Care in Alaska kids for your leadership in this effort. I think it's a really big transition to move from being sort of a victim in a circumstance to becoming an advocate. And Amanda, your leadership in particular advancing the advocacy efforts for foster youth and making sure that youth rights are being considered in our state is really remarkable, and I'm personally very grateful. Is there any questions for Ms. Metivier or any of our guests here today? Representative Tarr.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just thought it would be good to give you an opportunity to tell us a little bit about how the work you do is supported, because I think you have to go out and fundraise, and you're a nonprofit, and anyhow, just so people get a sense of that, I don't think where the state is really supporting the Facing Foster Care in Alaska organization in any way.
Yeah, Representative Tarr, through the chair. We are a nonprofit, so our organization actually started in 2003 with some support from the Casey Foundation and initially the OCS Independent Living Program, and we were just a small youth advisory group to OCS, and so I was actually one of the original youth. I was in foster care at the time, and we decided we wanted to become our own entity separate from anything, and so we went out and worked toward getting 501c3 status. We found volunteer attorneys and other people who could help us file this really complicated paperwork with the state. And so the majority of our funding is does come from local foundations and is private donors, or we fundraise through things like Pick, Click, Give. We got a grant for this from a local foundation in Anchorage. We have in the past gotten some funding from OCS. We host statewide retreats in Anchorage, but that funding is grant funding, and it goes out through a public process, and so it's something that we have to apply for, just like, you know, all other agencies. And so we have a very small budget. The majority of the work that we do is volunteer. Our youth, we have our own sort of internal political process where we have youth who are elected to represent each of the five OCS regions for 2 years. So we have regional representatives. Tomorrow is actually the end of our two-year term. And so we'll have elections, and our youth members will vote to vote in new members. And so 2 year terms, we have youth who run their campaigns. They have to get up and give a speech and promise things to our membership and talk about what they'll do in their communities. Whether that's, for example, a long time up in Fairbanks, we had youth every year who would wash cars, and they would raise money to go to an independent living conference out in the lower 48, and that's what they just love to do up there. And in Anchorage, there's more training opportunities, and so youth do a lot of training or presenting at conferences, and so it's really up to youth in that community. We leave it up to the regional rep to kind of determine how things go, and then that youth board also plans with our governance board of directors and helps with things like fundraising, but we have a group of adults and people from the community who volunteer to help with fundraising and writing grants, and we spend a lot of hours and a lot of long nights trying to find money.
Well, it's very impressive work.
Thanks.
Representative Johnson.
Hi, thank you, and thank you all for being here. So you have a separate governance besides the five regions?
Yeah, Representative Johnson, through the chair, we have youth who represent the five OCS regions of the state, and then we have a governance nonprofit board of directors, and that's representative of people who have skills in finances. We have two attorneys who help us to kind of navigate things. If we have a business side of things and we're going out to do advocacy, then we kind of need some legal advice on that sometimes. So we have folks who are experts in nonprofit, organizational development. So it's really just community members who come in and volunteer their time to help.
And do you have term limits?
Our governance board term limits are staggered, so we don't lose everyone all at once. So I think it's 2, 3, and 4 years. So people will leave and new people will come on at different points in time.
Thank you.
Any other questions? All right. Thank you very much, Ms. Tudier.
Thanks again.
Okay, now we are going to turn our attention to HB 151 relating to the foster care system in Alaska. We're going to be hearing from the sponsor and taking invited testimony. I believe that Representative Guerra has a committee substitute to present before the committee, so we need a motion to bring the CS forward as a working document.
Madam Chair, I move that Health and Social Services Committee adopt a blank committee substitute for House Bill 151, work order number 30-LSO451/R as a working document.
All right, and I will object for the purposes of discussion. Representative Guerra, please introduce yourself for the record. Walk us through the bill as well as the changes to the CS.
Thank you, Representative Spanholtz. Madam Chair, members of the committee, this is my aide, Laura Cherty. I'm Representative Les Guerra from District 20. If at any point you decide you would rather hear from Amanda, who knows this bill, you can certainly bring her up, and you'll have me next week if you'd like.
I believe we'll give her the opportunity to do that in a little bit.
Thank you. Madam Chair, would you like me to go through the bill or go through the committee's substitute changes first?
Which do you think would be most helpful?
Whatever I think would be most helpful?
Uh-huh.
Thank you. I think I'll go through the bill, for many years we have tried to make the changes we can in a foster care system that sees roughly 35% to 40% of our youth come out homeless, roughly 17% to 20% end up incarcerated. we have done things that have improved success and that have helped youth who come through the system find ways to succeed, and I think we've done good things. Last year, Senator Kelly said to me, I want to see something big. I want to see something that really fixes the system. And we have tried things that fix parts of the system over the years, things that are not very costly, but I think we just have to face up to the fact that this is the problem, that it, in part the problem that OCS faces. The national standard is that we are supposed to have somewhere between 12 and 15, maybe 17 cases per caseworker. In a place like Alaska, Director Lawton will tell you it's more like 12 cases because there's so much travel. We don't have a compact state. It takes long to visit a family by plane or by boat. And so what happens when we don't meet those standards, and let me just let you know how far off those standards we are. Director Lawton feels like the 12-to-1 ratio makes the most sense here. We have 43 cases per caseworker up in the Matsu office. So that's 350% above what a caseworker can probably handle. We have 30 to 43 in six separate offices in the state, from Bethel to Anchorage to Homer. And at some point, when you don't have the people who are supposed to get to know our youth and work with our youth, you don't get youth out of the foster care system. I spent a lot of my time following Amanda. Like, she gets there first and I get there second. Amanda was the first Alaskan, as I mentioned, to receive a national award from the Casey Family Foundation for her work. She's one of the most knowledgeable people on foster care in the state. And so we work together to try and figure out how do we fix some of these problems. If I can just digress on how I had it much easier and why we're trying to change the law so the folks behind me also have it much easier. In 12 years of foster care for me, I had one caseworker who spent, even when she got reassigned, still came and visited me and actually came up to Alaska for my wedding. And so with the dislocation that I had, it was minimized by the fact that I had familiar people in my life who knew me. What we have in Alaska is, within the first year of work at OCS, 50% of our new caseworkers burn out. And according to the federal government, the part that works in foster care, every time you have to replace a new worker, it costs you about $50,000 in retraining and in recruiting, and it's a waste of money. So what we have right now is wasting money, losing 50% of our new workers in the first year. And it doesn't work, because we know that with a stable caseworker who's able to make monthly visits, which caseworkers in Alaska are not able to do by and large, you speed the time that a child gets out of the foster care system and into what we call permanency. Permanency is a loving home, either with your original family, reunification, or a new home. Without the staff to do that, when you have staff that basically bounce from crisis to crisis, what Casey Family Programs says, staff that are not able to do customer service, but instead they do claims processing. Their big goal is to make sure we start doing customer service in foster care. So the bill addresses these things in a few ways. Number one, obviously the staffing problem is real. Without the monthly visits, caseworkers don't get to know their youth. And youth who see a new caseworker every 6 or 8 or 10 or 12 or 14 months develop, frankly, a distrust of adults and don't get the help they need from an adult who knows them. And it slows down the move to permanency. That's what the studies show. We first focus on this bill on new workers. New Jersey has sort of adopted the gold standard here on caseload limits and new workers. We do about 2 to 3 weeks of training for new workers. In New Jersey, they've mandated 6 to 8 weeks of new training, and we've adopted the New Jersey standard. Under federal law, we've recognized that with new workers, you need to keep their caseloads down as they're learning their job. These are the ones that burn out at a 50% rate in their first year because they say in their exit interviews, the work is overwhelming, I'm not trained enough, and I don't get the supervision that I need, and they leave. So we say for new workers, we will comply with the federal standard that says you'll get a 75% federal match for the time a worker is in training if you limit their caseloads to 6 cases during their first 3 months when they're learning the job, and 12 cases their next 3 months while they're learning their job and in training. We're not even close to that. And that's part of the reason for the burnout. That's part of the reason that the youth behind me have had so many different social workers and caseworkers and different people in their lives when they need stability in their lives. That's part of the bill. It's a caseload limit for new workers. Part of the bill is to make sure new workers have what the evidence-based practice says is mentors, people they can go to as they're learning their job, people they can go to when they're overstressed, people they can go to when they have questions about their job. This is what happens right now. We have a law in this state that this legislature passed, which is a good law, that says if you leave foster care, it used to be if you were 16 and you left foster care, you thought you were out on your own, you thought you could do it, and then you realized a week later that you were homeless and you really couldn't do it on your own. The law used to be that you could not come back into the foster care system. You had to stay out, maybe in Covenant House, maybe somewhere else. We changed the law to let you come back in. But with the caseloads that these new workers have, a lot of them don't know those rules, the basic rules that we have in our statutes to protect kids. And so at some point, you can keep passing new laws, but if you don't have caseworkers who know those laws and are masters in those laws, our children aren't going to succeed. We know of a case of a child who just wasn't, was a caseworker didn't know he was allowed to come back in, and that we were supposed to make it easy. And so the youth lived at Covenant House for quite a while. It's being rectified, but it took too long. It's important for youth who get separated to have contact with their siblings. I don't have to tell you why that is. The youth behind me have had their lives uprooted. And at times, they're placed in a different home than their siblings. This bill has a provision so that we can do more to maintain sibling contact. That's important. I can go into why at some point, but I think you know. There has been an old model in this country where foster parents are supposed to be temporary and disappear from your life. But as it turns out, a lot of foster parents become very important to a foster youth. And so as youth bounce between homes, and I think you've seen that youth bounce between homes in this state, they lose people sometimes who are very, very close with. There's a Harvard study in your packet, and there's a brief reference, but it's a new recognition that we should help maintain the contacts with those foster families who are important to a youth. So they have somebody when they turn 18 or 19 or 20 or 21 and they're out on their own, they have somebody they can call. Because like for us, we've had somebody we can call when we were 21 and couldn't afford rent or faced a real problem and couldn't handle it. We can't send youth out on their own at age 21 and expect they're going to figure it out when people from a stable family aren't able to figure it out. One of the most important things we can do to meet really the national goal, and it's the KC Family Program's announced goal, which is to reduce the number of youth in foster care by 50%, to put the foster care system out of business. You got to put the resources into the system first so you can work your way to get kids out of foster care and into permanent homes. And so one of the most important things you can do is do a comprehensive family and friends search. So a child ends up in the foster care system, there may be a grandmother out there. I met two Olympians in Washington this year who are former foster youth, Simone Biles, who many of you know about, the other Olympian is going to, she's not listening, but she would not look kindly on the fact that I can't remember her name right now. But both of them grew up in a system where the resources were available to find a family member, and within 6 months, they were adopted by another family member. And those youth, as their medals show, grew up very well and very stably. When you don't have the resources in the system and you have workers bouncing from crisis to crisis, they are not completing their family searches the way they need to. They are not finding those family members who could become an adoptive parent, or who could be a stable foster parent or guardian who knows the child already and loves the child already. we're missing family members, Madam Chair, members of the committee. And so part of this bill works to ensure that we don't miss family members. Again, the goal is to put the foster care system out of business. So that's a combination of having enough caseworkers, so your caseworker can do the research that's necessary to find what family members may be out there and call them and find out which ones are appropriate, so a youth doesn't end up in a strange home of a non-relative, so they don't end up in this vicious cycle of bouncing from strange home to strange home to strange home when there was a loving home there that nobody knew about. I mean, imagine all the damage you would save just for one child and what that would mean. And if you could do that for 50 children or 100 children, how many lives you could improve by doing that. There's a disincentive in the law right now to find a permanent home for a child over 18. We don't do adoption subsidies and guardianship subsidies. So for a child who goes into guardianship or is adopted before 18, we often allow, Director Lawton can explain this better, we often allow the payment of basically the foster care daily rate to those adoptive families. But if you do this, if you leave foster care after 18 and want to get adopted, those daily rates are not available to you. There's a disincentive for adoption by not providing the adoption subsidy after age 18. One of the most important things OCS does to get a child into a permanent home, which is either with their original family or into a new family that's permanent, and I hate using the word permanency. I mean a loving home. That's the home I'm talking about. Is we have a permanency plan, and there are meetings where caseworkers, when they have the time, organize meetings with people important in a child's life, hopefully, and they try and figure out a permanent home for the child or a way to get the child reunified with their family. Again, when the caseworkers have the time. But we want children to have a voice in that. Often children know who should be on that permanency team. So we say a youth over age 14 should also be able to nominate two people to be on the permanency team. This isn't all about adults looking after children. A 14-year-old knows a lot about their life. We have a provision in this bill that is aimed to help reduce this other vicious cycle we have, which is some of the greatest foster parents come in the system, they don't get their calls returned, and they leave. Or they come in the system, and they find it too difficult, and they leave. And how are they going to get their calls back when we've got a claims processing system and not a customer service system? They're supposed to call up and say, I want to take a child on a field trip, can I do that? I want to take a child on a vacation, can I do that? I think the child I have would do really well if I put she or he into a cross-country ski program, or if they played soccer or hockey. They need permission from the caseworker to do all those things. In part, it's a waste of the caseworker's time, and in part, it slows down the ability of the foster parent to make a plane reservation, get the child involved in these things. It's frustrating for the foster parents. Often your best foster parents leave. We know that. I think you have all spoken to foster parents who have left. We should make the system more friendly to them. So we've adopted what the federal government calls the prudent parent standard, which is we allow those decisions to be made by a trained foster parent. So they don't have to first get the permission of their caseworker before they can go make the cheapest plane reservation they can to get a child to take a child down to Disneyland. The parent will no longer have to wait a week to find out whether they can make their reservation. OCS is working on that internally, but this is in the statute. Madam Chair, I know we've got time constraints. There's a lot I could say about the bill. That is the 50,000-foot level of the bill. Caseworker, caseload standards. Again, OCS says it should be roughly 12 cases per caseworker. We don't put a number in the bill. We say the amount of caseworkers necessary so that we can work with youth and get them out of the foster care system and get them the things that they need to succeed. OCS right now says that's roughly 12 cases per caseworker. We have the new We have the new worker training standard, and we have the caseload limits on new caseworkers so we don't burn them out so quickly and we can actually train them and give them a chance at their job before they decide it's too hard. We have the other things that we talked about. Part of the bill is aimed at protecting youth while they're in foster care so they have as much stability and love as possible, and part of the bill is to get them out of foster care as quickly as possible. We've heard that from many, many people in this building. Many, many people who disagree, but who agree that the best thing you can do, if possible, is either reunify the child with their original family, if we can do that, or find that child a way out of the system into a permanent family, if that's not going to work out. And we need to do that quickly. The federal standard is to do that within 24 months. Mm-hmm. We're not doing that. And there are a number of people behind me who, as you've seen, were not placed with a permanent family within 24 months. And until we start doing things like that, Madam Chair, members of the committee, we're going to just keep complaining about a system instead of fixing it. I guess I have to apologize to this committee that I've run out of free ideas. I've run out of free ways to fix the system. And I respect the fact that Senator Kelly said to me, you need to do something big so we don't keep coming back here year to year. This is what we need to do. This is very much modeled on what people in the system consider to be the gold standard in foster care reform. It's the New Jersey standard. I'm sure you'll have a chance to hear from other people. I will tell you that on everything I just spoke to you about, Amanda Mativier is twice the expert I am. I'll also tell you that of the things that we've gotten passed in this legislature, she's been behind a lot of those things because she knows the system very well. With that, I don't want to take more time than the committee has, so I'm happy to stay here, but I can also come back. I know other people have less of an ability to do that.
Thank you, Representative Guerra. Is there any questions for Representative Guerra? We will have another opportunity to ask questions of Representative Guerra. Amanda has just exited the room. Perhaps we could let her know that she has an opportunity now to testify.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Welcome back, Ms. Mativier.
For the record, again, my name is Amanda Mativier. Mm-hmm. I apologize for the baby. She was sleeping, and she slept for a whole hour, and I thought she might just sleep right through the committee, and then she woke up, and you guys came.
Babies are babies. We've all had them here, so not a problem.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, thanks for taking testimony on House Bill 151. Mm-hmm. I think Representative Guerra covered a number of things. I just had a few additions. So one of the major provisions of House Bill 151 is setting standards for workload for caseworkers. And over and over and over again, you hear all these issues, whether it's related to youth aging out of the system and ending up homeless or children who spent countless years in the foster care system. We have a young man behind me, Nathan, who he spent 18 years in foster care. He spent his entire life in foster care. And I think a number of these issues would be wiped away if caseworkers had the time to do what they needed to do. And even though this might cost money up front to fund those positions, in the long term, the state would save probably millions of dollars on cases like Nate's and others for young people who have spent 10, 15, 18 years in the system. We're paying for a daily rate for a young person to be in foster care for the foster parent. We're paying for the caseworker who might turn over. We're paying for the GAL. We're paying for attorneys for young people and their parents. We're paying for the court system. We're paying for cost of care, so things like clothing and food and all those things. That could go away. If children were to leave earlier to permanency, whether it be guardianship or adoption or even going back to their families because someone had time to work with their parents to get better or to do whatever it is they need to do to work their case plan, then young people could be leaving our system much earlier, and we would save ourselves a lot of money in the long run too, because we wouldn't be paying for young people in the system. And we wouldn't be paying for those long-term social services that they're going to need when they leave the system, whether that be aging out or all the things that happen when they become adults. I've been doing this for a long time. I've been with Facing Foster Care in Alaska now for 14 years, and I've worked with thousands of youth in our system now, and I see more and more our young people who are leaving the system and having children, and now their children are coming into our system because we're not preparing them. We're launching them out into society without a support system, without connections. They don't have, they say there's five protective factors that parents are supposed to have, right? Social support, concrete social support in times of need. Someone to call when you're stressed out. And a lot of our youth who leave the system without any of those connections and have these dismal outcomes, then they have children, and their children are coming in. And so we're creating our own snowball effect with our system. And so I really think that the major piece of this is setting those standards for caseworkers. I've also been a foster parent for about 10 years now, for a long time. And my husband and I take teenagers, and we've had lots of caseworkers come in and out of our home, and they're usually showing up on the last day of the month. Might even be a Sunday at 8 o'clock at night. We're usually feeding them. You could physically see how exhausted they are. And they usually, burn out and leave. I don't know any young person we've had in our home where their caseworker really lasted a while. They always end up turning over, and we get somebody else. I myself have two college degrees in social work from UAA, and when I aged out of foster care, my goal was to get a social work degree and go work at OCS. And then I got my degree, and I saw that turnover and the burden that workers have placed on them, and I knew it wasn't realistic, that I couldn't last in that setting. And so I think our system loses good people, too, people who have the skills and expertise, people who have the degrees necessary to do the job. So I really think that's the biggest piece, and it will contribute to all the other things, whether that be contact with siblings. A number of our young people here, almost all of them who have siblings, that were separated from their siblings at some point. So there are already things in the law that say OCS is supposed to make efforts to keep their siblings together. But we don't have a lot of placement options, and we have workers that don't have a lot of time. So there's things in here around communication post-foster care. But again, if workers don't have that time to do their job, they're not going to be able to do it. Engaging youth in case planning, starting at 14. As Representative Guerra said, there's a lot of 14-year-olds who know a lot about life. But also, I think, in working with adolescents and teenagers, there's this really great quote, and it's better to plan for the battle than battle the plan. And so I think if you have young people on board, they're going to, you can't just tell a young person you're going to get adopted. You have to really ask them and engage them in that process. But again, I still think the most important piece is the workload standard and increasing that training for workers, because that's going to solve a lot of problems. We're running short on time, so again, Madam Chair and members of the committee, thank you for allowing time for testimony.
Is there any questions for Ms. Mativier? All right. Thank you very much. I appreciate it. Ms. Lawton, did you want to testify? I see you in the room. Are you just here for questions? All right. Thank you. Is there anybody else in the room who wishes to testify on HB 151? All right. Thank you. So we are going to, I'm so sorry. Come on forward, Neva.
Thank you.
Put yourself on the record. Introduce yourself.
Okay, for the record.
Your testimony. Thanks.
My name is Nevaeh Ingham. I personally think the House Bill 151 would help not just the youth that are still in care, but the ones that are going to be in care. My personal experience is the lack of communication with my younger sibling while in care. She was put in care at 9 years old, and I was 16. I got to see her a handful of times, and then she kind of disappeared. I lost contact. Now that I'm out of care and she's out of care, she doesn't want to have any relationship with me because she feels I abandoned her. But it's not that I abandoned her, it's just I never got a phone number, I never got an address, so I can't go and see her and, support her in this time. Mm-hmm. And I really, really think that there's a lot of kids that if they just are able to talk to their siblings, not only could they help and support their sibling during that very difficult time, but it's also a mental health issue. you know, you're not alone. You have somebody. And even though you lost your parents, and your parents maybe aren't that person for you, your sibling is somebody who's in the same exact position as you and can relate to you better than anyone else. But that's all I have to say, and I thank you for your time and the opportunity.
Thank you, Nevaeh. Is there anybody else that would like to testify? There's all right.
I'm already crying. Might as well cry on record. Sorry. Okay. So my name is Rachel Besworth. I don't have my cell phone on me. I just want to show you guys living proof what permanency does to people. God dang it. So Amanda Mativier is my foster mom. She had me when I was 14, and I was going down a wrong road. I was... Plenty of people behind me saw me when I was going down that bad road, and I didn't want anybody in my life. Why am I crying like this? I tell my story all the time. I didn't want any connection with anybody. I went through 47 foster homes because everyone abandoned me. I was alone. Amanda, she took me in back in after I went through treatment, after I somewhat sort of saw a future for my life, and she took me back in, and now she's my mom, and I have a little sister, and I'm the only child, so it's, if it shows you living proof what permanency and connection could do to a child. If I was 6 years old and would have found a woman like her, I would have had such an easier life. I would have been not going through home, to school, from state to state, going to treatment. I could have done something with my life earlier in life. I just found out what I wanted to be when I grow up. And I'm 20 years old, second year in college. Permanency could change the lives of so many people. And for future generations, this is why I'm here. I'm here to change permanency for the better. People don't understand what it can do to somebody. Half of the youth I work with, they still don't have enough permanent connection. And I want to take them home. Like Sarah, she, me and her both call Amanda mom. And it's the fact that having that person you can go to at the end of the day and saying, hey, I got this new job. Like, this is amazing. This is great. But a lot of youth don't have that. They don't have that connection. Hospital 27, I was last year. 151. It could, even with the funding, it can dramatically change the lives of children. If I never had that permanent connection, I wouldn't be in college. I wouldn't have graduated high school. I wouldn't have gotten a car. I would probably be incarcerated right now. I would have been on the street. Who knows?
We're glad you're here with us. Thank you very much, Ms. Bedworth. All right, I'm seeing the time. I'm noting that it's 5:12, and we have to get back to the floor to continue work on the operating budget. I want to thank everybody who's come today and spoken as to the challenges we have in foster care and HB 151. We're going to set aside this bill for now. We're not going to be taking any public testimony on HB 103. I apologize to those that are on the line today. Our schedule has been very fluid this week due to the operating budget. We will be having a hearing on Saturday, the 18th, covering HB 159, the governor's omnibus legislation confronting the opioid epidemic, and HB 103, that's between 3 and 5 p.m., and potentially other bills previously heard or scheduled. All right, the time is 5:13 p.m., and this hearing of the House Health and Social Services Committee is adjourned.